Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to We'll Get To It. I know I've been saying we'll get around to it, but it's We'll Get To It. Don't mind that. But my name is Anthony Brown, a.k.a. And I guess I could be, a.k.a. Pokemon Trainer. That just popped up on my screen. So I'm a.k.a. Pokemon Trainer today with my co-host.
That's good.
Nick Brooks, a.k.a. as white as glue right now because the sun is so, for some reason, the sun is so bright out that it's covering my entire face.
Don't worry. They won't see that. They'll hear your voice before they see your face.
Oh, I know. I just don't want to say it anyways.
And, I already said this is the We'll Get To It, not the We'll Get Around To It. So, We'll Get To It podcast show. And before we get into what we got going on here today, I guess I'll go on a little bit of news. Apparently, North Korea is mad about something, and it seems like we're in a sinking situation. So I don't know more about that. We'll have to do more of it. I'm sorry, that joke was terrible, and I apologize.
I was about to say, like, what's going on?
So if you all don't know, North Korea sent a threatening text message to Joe Biden and saying that something about a sink, and we're trying to figure out what sink. Like, did someone leave a sink on over there that was an American and didn't turn it off, and now the water bill's up high? I don't know, and I'm sorry that I'm making jokes at that expense, but it's funny. Other news, the world's still on fire. I'm going to keep saying it every podcast until the world stops being on fire. But on the bright news, certain schools are allowing students to return back to campus after spring break, which sounds like a death sentence to me. Because well, hear me out. It's this. There's a new strain of COVID, and it is also in the water. How? And I said that last, episode, but yeah, it's in the water now. So next thing we know, it's gonna have a physical form and be hunting us like predators. So I'm down for that. I don't know. I'm just down.
Anthony, by allowing people back on campus, are you saying that classes are going to start being on campus now, or are you saying that people are, like, they're letting them in case of, like what do you mean by allowing them back on campus now?
So, what I've read from other schools that they're allowing students to come back, like, full-time, like, in other states, and, like, full-time, like how things used to be. With for us, unfortunately, like basically,
yeah, we don't talk about out, Texas.
All out every day,
just like the full shebang. No, but for us in our case, they're only doing like I think student activity events at our college, and
oh, okay.
If that goes good, then the governor will be like, well, I guess they're doing pretty good. They haven't had any outbreaks, anything, so. Just go ahead and let the children go back and be children, But enough of talking about COVID and it transforming into a predator alien and hunting us down. Let's get off into what we're doing today. So today, ladies and gentlemen, this is supposed to be like the first episode back because I want to start off with a bang. I want to have like a professional come in and we ask them the burning questions that I got off the internet and from people around me and from just things that were just people want to know. So I'm gonna let my honorable guest introduce himself first, but a little bit you all need to know about this man is that he has sold out millions around the world. He's had artwork in New York. He's had artwork in West Africa. He's had artwork all across the world. Enough of me, riding the boat. I would love for him to introduce himself. So, Jeff?
Sure. Thanks, Anthony. Thanks for that intro.
No problem.
My name is Jeff Vaughn. Professionally, I go by Jeffrey Vaughn, but everybody refers to me as Jeff in person, which may not be unusual. I grew up in this area. You want me to do a little bio? Or
sure, you can.
Throw it into questions. Okay. Well, I was born in St. Louis. My family moved to Alton when I was five, so essentially Alton is my hometown. I had a brief Well, it wasn't really brief. For a number of years, I was studying in St. Louis at Washington University, where I got my Bachelor of Fine Arts. From there, I moved to Texas, where I studied at University of Dallas and received my Master of Arts and Master of Fine Arts there. And I was also married to my wife, Mary, formerly McFarlane, just before graduate school. We were in Corpus Christi at the time, but so I spent a number of years in Texas, but then moved back after I got my graduate degree. We had our first children. First child was born in Texas. Second child was born here in Alton. And I moved back kind of in search of teaching positions here because I knew people here. Even though I knew the students in Dallas, there was more of a draw to come home to family and friends. And I thought I had a good chance to network here. And some friends had already said that I might get a teaching position. And I did. Sure enough, I got a teaching position at Fontbonne College at the time. Now it's university. In printmaking, which is what I studied in graduate school. So I kind of started out as a printmaker, as a professor, a teacher. I was an adjunct. Well, they gave me a title of assistant professor, which was interesting. Normally you don't become a professor until you're hired full time. The other schools that I taught at, St. Louis U and UMSL, mostly St. Louis U, I was an adjunct instructor. But then I found my way to Lewis and Clark after the Great Recession, when I had stopped teaching for a while, because they hired a full-time person at St. Louis U who was able to teach my classes. So in a way I thought, oh, good. Now I have a chance to just focus on my artwork, which I did. And it went pretty well for a year, but the second year was when the economy crashed. Nobody was buying art. I mean, the galleries were closing. New York was the, kind of the central art market in the world that was really struggling too. And I had work at a gallery in New York then, which closed. That gallery closed during the Great Recession. That was when I got hired at Lewis and Clark. I was desperate for any kind of a job. So I was looking for a teaching position. And I couldn't find one in St. Louis, but some friends of mine were teaching at Lewis and Clark and invited me to teach there. And I kind of always thought it'd be more exciting to go somewhere else and teach away from your hometown. But I was very grateful to get a teaching position then, and it carried on to become a full-time position. And what I think I've been at Lewis and Clark for 13 years now. So that's kind of the record. It's the most years I've been at any one college or university teaching. And became a full-time position, became a photography teaching position. So I mainly focused on photography, which was new. I hadn't taught photography anyplace else. And I think the relationship with the students kind of blossomed at Lewis and Clark. I just felt closer to the students because I was around the campus more, around the college more, around the classroom more, interacting with the students more as a full-time professor. And so it was a really nice kind of capstone on a career of teaching. I kind of focused on teaching more than on art, but that's kind of my intro.
So I have a question. So with our current situation with COVID, I know I people hate when you constantly bring it up, but how does it affect you art-wise, like getting your art out? Like, are people still like attending shows, or have the shows transitioned into virtual shows?
Kind of a little bit of both. It seems like the commercial galleries are still trying to have people come into the gallery space to view the shows in person, as long as it's safe. They're not having receptions. They're not having opening receptions where there would be a large number of people in the space. They're trying to emphasize spacing, social distancing, and wearing a mask. They all say to wear a mask. The colleges and universities are a little more cautious. SIUE, for example, I have some paintings in an invitational exhibit there, which is open throughout this month. And that's by appointment only. You have to call the secretary and then she lets you in. the gallery space and stays in there while you're in viewing the artwork. I went over to view the work on Wednesday, and that was the situation. And they had a virtual artist talk in place of a reception. So we had a Zoom talk that lasted for about 2.5 hours, because there's 9 artists in the show, and each artist took a turn speaking about their work and answering questions. So that's kind of like a reception that will tend to last 2 to 3 hours. So I guess in place of a kind of the social atmosphere, which is what receptions are like, especially galleries, commercial galleries, just universities, oftentimes will have an artist talk at some point during the reception. So that artist talk was on Wednesday night, the virtual reception, or took place of a reception at SIUE. So that's kind of the way it seems to be playing out. The colleges and universities are still doing mostly virtual for shows. That may not be true in all cases. Colleges and universities that have face-to-face classes more so than we have at Lewis and Clark, or most colleges and universities are probably having maybe more in-person receptions, but generally speaking, that's the case. The commercial galleries, I think, want people to come in because that's how they make a living. They want people to see the work up close and hopefully make a sale. So there are plans, you know, to just let people come in a safe atmosphere and to look at the art.
And I had actually went to one of Jeff's shows. It's been, you know, during COVID. And I guess that was like back in December. And, you know, they had an opening, but it wasn't really like an opening necessarily. It was in the middle of the day, and it was just kind of like a walk-in thing. And I mean, everything was really safe. It was really nice. So they were able to have the doors open and everything. And I don't know, it seems like it was working out at least a bit for really the in-person viewing.
Did you feel like that you were unsafe, that COVID was just gonna like pop up and was like, oh, you like the art? Got you.
You know. No, it was really cool, or at least like the day I went out. Like I said, it was warm out. Everyone was wearing masks. We were over in St. Louis. It was pretty good. Like it was bougie, it was nice.
Okay. I like that word bougie. So I guess, unless Kaylee, you want to introduce yourself. I'm sorry. I went to the question and you just popped up, and I want people to be like, oh my God, who's that mysterious woman talking? OMG, freaking out.
Jeff's alter ego. No. Hey everyone, I'm Kaylee. I am a student at Lewis and Clark. And I'm also, I've been one of Jeff's students for, I don't know, forever. I've been at Lewis and Clark for a really
fat minute. Yeah.
So we know each other pretty well, so hopped on here with all of y'all.
So I guess we'll jump into the first question, Jeff. The first question was, what is your biggest influence? Like what kind of, like, you know, got you into art, and like what basically, like, got you, like, what artist or what art piece or what kind of got you into art, basically? Like, what motivated you to kind of, like, you know, get into the art world? And, like, you know, what artist influenced you? What, you know, basically, you were like, oh, my goodness, that's a beautiful drawing. I want to be an artist for the rest of my life.
I like the way you phrased that. It made me think. Just a lot of thoughts were racing through my mind. Like, going back to my childhood, maybe is where it started, and probably most artists would say that. You know, I could draw well, and I think people noticed that and recognized it. And my mother was a big influence. I wasn't thinking about talking about my childhood, but she used to sketch and help me with the drawing, because she studied art at Washington U. When she grew up in St. Louis, so when she was a student there, she took a lot of drawing classes and just helping with my drawing, and encouraged me to enter some competitions in grade school. And I had some private lessons during the summer at the Ursuline Convent on Danforth and Alton. And high school, there weren't any art classes in high school, but whenever I could do an art project, I would do an art project instead of writing a paper, which is probably true of most artists or people with other talents, music or speaking, as Anthony has. By the time I got to college, I wasn't studying art because the advice I was getting was you can't make a living as an artist, which we all hear, and which is generally true as well. But once I took a drawing class in college, that was it. I was hooked. And from then on, I considered myself, you know, inspired to be an artist and working as an artist as much as possible. But influences, let's see. Once I did decide to stay in art or study art, and I did see myself as being an artist for my life as a career. I mean, it became a career choice then. It was all, you know, pretty sudden. When I took that drawing class, I was convinced that that's what I wanted to do. So I guess early teachers, Peter Marcus at Washington U, I majored in printmaking, and then University of Dallas, it was Jürgen Strunk. He was a printmaking professor there. But I also studied painting along with printmaking, but my main, concentration was printmaking. And I have to mention Mary, my wife. She also was a huge part of the decision. The fact that she would go along with it, would go along with her husband being an artist, which is not, as you know, it's not an easy way to make a living. And I keep saying that because there's ups and downs. And, you know, teaching has helped me fill in the income. I mean, there's great times with art income too, when you have big sales or shows, or you get involved with the galleries. There's in case some of the galleries, one of the galleries in particular sold my photographs very well for a long period of time. And that was a really nice chunk of income because there's a lot of corporate collections, hospitals that are looking to fill wall space with art. A lot of different ways you can go with it. Talking about influences. But anyway, I mentioned Mary because she was willing to put up with the ups and downs. She was a professional medical person, physical therapist. And so, I mean, that helped a lot. It helped the two of us. It helped our relationship, helped our family to have that salary of hers along with, you know, what I was able to do with art. The two of us together worked well enough, you know, to raise a family, and we're able to provide for the children adequately. But so she's a big influence, just because that it's nice to have that domestic, safe, so to speak. You know, you got a family, you have your spouse, your children, you know, you have that life too, along with the art. And in a way, it kind of balances it. I think that helped me a lot. So I think she's a big influence, maybe the biggest, along with teachers and artists, of course, you know, for the profession, for the career. Then it was the teachers I mentioned, artist friends also who are supportive. You know, there are certain artists I can talk to for as long as they'll stay on the phone, as long as I can stay on the phone, we'll be discussing art and galleries. And one of my friends in St. Louis refers to it as the gallery wars, and trying to make a living as an artist, and the ups and downs. And but in terms of artists, famous artists, so to speak, I mean, Paul Cézanne, I never get around to seeing this in interviews, but I've always loved Cézanne's paintings. And that surprises some people because his paintings are somewhat abstract. Some people refer to him as the father of modern art in art history. But the way he painted, the way he saw him, I can spend more time in front of one of his paintings at a museum than just about any artist I can think of. Just the way he applied paint, the kind of the symphony of brush strokes and there's a kind of a pattern that develops when you look at it, and you see the same shapes and colors in different parts of the painting. He just was an amazing artist, I think. And sometimes you feel like you're feeling like you have some communication with the artist when you're standing in front of the painting and you sense the language or the language that the artist used. It's communicating something to you, but that's one of the wonderful things about art. So there's Cézanne, and then the photorealists. I was taken up with photorealism at a young age. I remember Joseph Raphael's a watercolor painter, does huge watercolors. He was a visiting artist at Washington U, and he showed his photorealist paintings in the auditorium. And I remember just being real taken aback with those. And that's kind of the beginning of when I started thinking of focusing on realism. And with the, I wasn't willing to work from photographs then, but a number of years later, I started working from photographs. So there was Richard Estes. And then in terms of other painters, Richard Estes did urban landscapes. I remember once then when I was a graduate student in Dallas, I drove to San Antonio. The McNay Art Institute had a exhibition called Real, Really Real, and Super Real, and it featured a lot of these new realist painters. And Richard Estes had some paintings in that show that I was really struck with. Just street scenes. He grew up in Chicago, did street scenes of New York. I think he moved to New York at a young age after he got his degree at Chicago Art Institute. And his paintings were just really impressive. So when I began to teach more photography, got interested in photography as well. Well, I didn't start teaching photography until later at Lewis and Clark, but Ansel Adams was one of my favorites. He's a very popular artist photographer. But when I discovered his work, I was just very struck with the same thing. He just had kind of an abstract language that I saw in his photography and his work. Let's see. I guess that about covers it for that answer.
Okay. So I got asked this question by a young artist she's trying to get out there and be noticed. So how do you seek out opportunities to like get your artwork to be seen or noticed per se?
Well, I think, word of mouth is good, networking, talking to people, other artists you know, older artists, if you're a young artist. And the other thing is just to maybe to research on your own. Now galleries have websites with the internet. You can look at the artwork that's shown in different galleries. And if you can be objective about it, you might be able to tell where your work would fit in. You might see artwork in a gallery that you think is great, you'd love to show in that gallery, but maybe your work's not quite like those other artists. And you can kind of tell, you know, certain galleries have a certain artwork that they present, that they represent with a certain style. Some are very painterly, some are loose. In terms of realism, I'm thinking about realism or abstraction, but other galleries will be more of a tightly rendered realism, very carefully painted, hard edged, no drippy paints, no runny paint. Other galleries would be more conceptual, more abstract. Some are more minimalist. Some are a variety, like Duane Reade Gallery in St. Louis, where Kaylee went to the show. He shows a variety of work, but it all has kind of a finished look to it. It all has a kind of a finished, articulate kind of expression, whether it's abstract art or representational art, or he shows a lot of clay work also, a lot of small sculptural pieces that are very intricate and very carefully done. But he has a nice representation, a nice group of successful artists that he deals with from all over the country. But they're all just kind of, the work is just focused and it's very unique. I think that's maybe, so that's kind of what his gallery seems to represent to me. It's just artists who have established work in a unique way that's very articulate. So I think that's kind of the fun of it, but that can be a lot of fun to just research galleries. There's artsy.net and First Dibs. Those are the two websites that a lot of the galleries advertise their work, their artists' work for sale. So you can just go through the different galleries there and just one search leads to another where you can kind of find a spot where your work might fit in. The other thing is to enter competitive exhibitions, juried exhibitions, which the class has been good at Lewis and Clark. I mean, we've been good about that, entering local shows and along with the student art show, just exhibit your work anytime you have a chance to get feedback, I think is important. Even if it's in the library, if it's in a bar, my first show was in a bar. My brother-in-law was a manager of a bar in downtown Alton, and I just hung a bunch of big prints that I had made at Washington U, and we put clamp-on lights above them from the ceiling rafters, and they're all connected to one switch, so you could turn on a light switch and all the lights would come on the artwork. And it was pretty neat for a show. So I guess that's the, if you want to make art, if you want to be an artist, I think you just have to find a way to get your work in front of people to see, and whatever road that takes is okay, you know, because eventually you'll find your way to a commercial gallery where you can start to make some sales and hopefully some income. But I mean, that's not the be all and end all either. I mean, I think the beauty of art is just that you have a passion to make it. And even if you don't make a living from it, even if you don't sell a lot of it, if you're inspired and you're being honest with yourself and that's what you want to produce, then you want to try to find a way to continue that growth and development. Oh, the other thing, what was your question? Your question was about how to develop as an artist?
Well, they asked like, you know, how to seek out more opportunities.
Seek out opportunities, that's right. I think teaching is an opportunity also to be an artist. Or working as a gallery assistant or working in a museum as an assistant in some capacity. Something that helps, that gives you that income so you can live a normal life and still do your artwork. So it's not, so you're not living in poverty. So I think a lot of artists do that. They find, most artists do really, they find some way to have an income along with their art, so they're not totally dependent on art sales, because there's a very few and rare group of artists that are able to make a living as an artist. Jerry Sals is a art critic, a kind of a recognized art critic celebrity now, and he said artists have to make an enemy of envy. They can't, because you're not going to make a lot of money as an artist, so you can't be envious of the people that are making money. You can't be envious of wanting to have a better income, because it may not come from your art. It might, but you'd be in that rarefied group of artists. But so I think getting involved in the art in some capacity so that you have a decent income along with it is very helpful, especially if you want to raise a family or have a spouse and however you want to live your life with your loved ones.
To me, it just sounds like, I don't know, a lot of creative solutions. Like, it doesn't sound like there's really one set path in my mind. It's just kind of like, you really got to get yourself out there, I guess, essentially. And I don't know if you're passionate about it. I feel like it's that thing where you kind of find your way through it. I don't know. It's kind of what I hear you echoing.
And basically, go ahead, Jeff.
Sure. Oh, okay. Yeah, I think what Kaylee said was what I was trying to communicate is just you have to be willing to put your work out there for people to see it. I mean, that's the only way you're going to get a following, you're going to get people interested in buying your work, is to find a way to, as often as possible, to be able to exhibit it. And that's our form of communication. It's how we communicate. It's a visual communication rather than talking to people about it. They're going to see your work, even if they don't see you, but they're going to see your work somewhere, and they're going to receive that uplift, that inspiration, that from your work, whatever you're trying to say with your work, so to speak. That's kind of a general expression, but artists go in so many different directions with the kind of imagery that they make. But like Kaylee said, I think that's it. Just have to get nervy, put your work out there, enter shows, enter competitions, and etc. Go ahead, Anthony.
But I was going to say, most importantly, is to not give up. That's the most important key, I feel, is as an artist, is even like if, you know, people don't notice your artwork, I feel like if you just keep practicing and keep drawing and just kind of keeping your skills sharp, eventually somebody's going to notice you, and then that person will share your artwork, and then that person will share your artwork, and then that person will share your artwork, and then next thing you know, you have a nice platform where you have people who will say, oh yeah, like, oh man, that print you got, like those prints you got in your background look real nice. Where'd you get them from? And then you go, oh, I got them from such and such. And they make this, they sell this. They have an Etsy, they have a Redbubble, they have this, they have that. So I just feel like it's more or less of just, you know, trial and error, basically. So I'm going to move on to the next question because we're almost out of time. So what advice would you give to any up and coming artist?
Tongue twister right there.
Yeah, that was a mean one. But yeah, so this person, I'm not gonna say their name, but they want to know, they're like a, well, I guess I could say they're like high school range, since they're like junior, senior, and they want to know what advice would you give them? You know, they want to get into the art world, they want to kind of, you know, make a living off of art. So what advice would you give them?
Well, I think it's not the only way to go, but I think studying in a academic atmosphere, college or university, I think is a good kind of reliable place to invest your time in, to learn art, because you have the ready-made community there of teachers, students, alumni that you can learn from and get support from. You can do it on your own too, and many artists do it on their own, but again, it's that you gotta have, I think, some financial backing if you do it on your own. It's kind of difficult to do it on your own if you don't have someone helping you, someone supporting you. Whereas the colleges and universities kind of have a support system to a certain extent. I mean, there's scholarships and grants and things like that that you can, financial aid that can help you to be able to study art and finance it so that you're not trying to figure out how to do it completely on your own. So I think that's a good place to do and grow as an artist. But I think also, I mean, again, you can do it on your own, but if you have a friend, loved one, spouse, they're very important. You have to make sure that they're revered, that you let them know how special they are in your life, that you love them, that you bring them along with you. You don't want to put your art above your relationships. I mean, that's another very important element, so that, because you need that emotional support too from the people that are close to you, whether it's your friend or spouse or whoever it might be. So that's important also, to focus on that relationship and make sure that your art doesn't become more important than everybody else in your life. balance it. So the balance is important too. And then for up and coming artists, I think that's a good place to start in the colleges and universities. And I think any place you can start showing your work, like Anthony, you had a really great explanation of how art kind of spreads. You know, the more people that put your work in their house, so to speak, or in their office, the more people are going to see it. And you're not really aware of that as an artist, but it was really good that you pointed that out, that this network starts to develop that you're really unaware of. You kind of, you're working in your studio, you're around certain people on a regular basis in your life, but your artwork's kind of drawing a new group of people that are seeing it that don't know you specifically, personally, but they know you through your artwork. And if they like it, they're gonna tell somebody else about it, just like you said. And so it's a good place to also focus. It's a good development. It's honest. Even if you don't sell all your work, if you sell it at a discount, I mean, anytime I can get the work in somebody's hands that wants to hang it in their house, that's a compliment. That's a real compliment that they want to even put it on the wall. And if that happens, more people are going to see it, just like Anthony said, and it's going to spread. They're going to tell somebody else about it, and they're going to say, well, where can I get one of those pictures? And one thing leads to another. I think I could go on and on, but I think that about covers it. I think I went over about three different things that I think are important, three different subjects.
I feel like we could, all of us are students besides Jeff here. I feel like we could relate to that in the fact that, I guess personally, I feel like college was a good choice, at least for art, myself, just because, like Jeff said, you really meet a lot of people. Like, it's really good for networking, and also just like setting aside time also for art, because we all know that, you know, life can really get in the way of doing things. But when you're in college, I feel like there's really that dedicated time to just kind of focus on it and to develop yourself.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, because I tried the fresh out of high school and tried to be an artist thing, and it did not go as planned. And it was a learning experience until I got to college and I kind of got the basic elements of what I needed before I tried to jump in the frying pan. I was like, oh, fresh out of the water, into the frying pan, and then I got burnt. And so then it was like, okay, let's try that again, redo. So instead of jumping out of the water, I jumped right back in, got a little wet. I was like, okay, this is normal. This is okay. I got the groove of this. And when I started seeing my skills go from where they were at to where they are now, it was like, okay, so now let me retry this again. This time I have a better skill set. I know how to conduct business a little bit better. I have the social skills, the network skills. I have everything I need to be a proficient artist. I'm going to use that, even though that's probably not the right word to use, but I'm going to be a more successful artist. That works better. So, well, thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Kaylee Chan. Thank you, Nicholas, for being here. So this is, we're winding down now. So I guess right now I'm addressing the audience. So thank you for joining us. I really appreciate you coming. I hope that this answers some of your burning questions. I hope that, you know, to get to hear from a professional's mouth, you know, what it's, you know, it takes to be an artist. I hope that you learn and that, you know, you take the information that you gained here today and, you know, you apply it to your current situation. If you are trying to be an artist, or you like making pottery and you just want to sell your Pikachu pottery pot plants to the people, use what you learned here today. It, you know, I might buy one, even though I don't own a plant. I'll just buy one because it's Pikachu. All jokes aside, I hope today was an informational day. I hope that you learned something. We hope that you join us again. Our next podcast will be interviewing the Screaming Eagles. I don't ask me anything. Nick knows more about them than I do, but We will be interviewing, I think, their lead singer.
No, we're going to be interviewing the whole band.
The whole band. Oh, wow. Okay. Well, willy dilly do. I didn't know that, but we'll be interviewing the whole freaking band. I hope that you are able to join us. You come by, maybe if you're a musician and you're trying to learn how to start a band, you're going to learn how to start a band, yo. But all jokes aside, in seriousness, I hope that you're taking care of yourself. I hope that you're trying your best. You're doing your best. And I hope that you're looking good doing it, too. I've been your host, Anthony Brown, with my co-host,
Nick Brooks.
And this is the We'll Get Around To. See you around for Pookie Poo. See you.